Good morning. Today's Daf and Baba Kama is Nun Hey. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the Daf. Daf is known as Zechon Ishmael Chlibe, Gabriela Bashmuel. We're on Nadal Amad Beis. We're starting today with the Mishnah on Nadal Amad Beis. We are finishing up today, God willing, the fifth parak of the Masechta. We're going to start the sixth parak this morning. As we go, get to Nun Hey Amad Beis, let's begin with the Mishnah. Mishnah starts off, Echad Shor V'Echad Kol Behema. Now, even though we talk about falling into a pit, we've been discussing boar since Daf Nun. Bama Mem Tesem Amad Beis, we've been discussing the Nezek of boar and the liability of digging a pit either in your private property or in a public property. And the Torah describes that you dig a pit and two animals are going to fall into a pit, either a chamor or shor. It's going to be either shor or chamor. It's going to be either an ox or a donkey that's going to fall into the pit. Now, even though the Torah is specific in terms of examples, but the truth of the matter is it's any animal. Now, we already discussed yesterday's daf that there is an exclusion towards kalim, that if a kli falls into a pit and it breaks, you're going to be potter, and adam that falls into a pit and dies, so you're going to be potter. So the liability is limited to animals. However, the Torah does give specific examples. What our Mishnah is about to teach us is, even though the Torah gives us specific examples, it's really any animal. And not only is it any animal, it's any living creature, meaning outside of humans, but it's any living creature. It could be animals, it could be birds. Anything that could be owned, any animal that could be owned, is subject to the compensation if it gets damaged by somebody else's pit. So then the question, which we'll discuss a little bit later on this morning, is, and why does the Torah specifically point to the examples of shor v'chamor? Okay, actually, the Mishnah is going to talk about it. But okay. Anyway, so this is what we've been discussing in our Mishnah. And while we're on this topic, so the Gemara is now, the Mishnah is going to give a total of 8 different mitzvahs in the Torah, which are animal related. And the point that the Mishnah is going to make regarding all 8 of these mitzvahs, is that even though the Torah is specific in terms of the examples that it gives, but really, truth be told, is that it applies to all animals. So let's see the Mishnah inside. Echad shor v'echad kol behema, whether it's an ox or whether it's any animal. L'nefilas habor, in terms of 1, liability of falling into a pit. 2, hafreshes har Sinai. Now, this is a mitzvah that we had 3,300 years ago, and we haven't had this mitzvah since. So it's funny that it's listed in the Mishnah, because it's a one-time mitzvah, and so generally speaking, we are more interested, the Gemara is more interested in mitzvahs that apply for all generations. So why this made it into the list, I don't know. But there's a mitzvah in the Torah where, when we gathered around Har Sinai 3,300 years ago, so we had to put a fence around Har Sinai, and we had to make sure that no animals passed over that fence. So that's number 2. Number 3, let's make kefal. If I steal an animal and I'm caught with the animal that I stole, so I have to be kefal. Number 4, hashavas aveda, returning a lost item. Number 5, prika. Animal is burdened, overburdened, with too much weight in the animal. So there's a mitzvah to help the owner of the animal unload the animal. Chasima, we're up to number 6. The mitzvah of not muzzling your animal as it's helping you thresh. Number 7, kalayim. Now, kalayim over here can mean one of 2 things. In other words, it means crossing. But it means can mean crossing, meaning actually crossing, mating 2 different types of animals, or it could also mean working together, harkava, meaning not having 2 different animals pull on the same plow. L'Shabbos, we have a mitzvah in the Torah that we have to make sure not only that we rest on Shabbos, but our animals rest on Shabbos as well. And the mitzvah of Shitas Behemta applies to all animals. V'chein, okay, so that climb was 7 and Shabbos was 8. So those are 8 mitzvahs in the Torah which are animal specific, but they are not limited to one type of animal. They apply to all animals. V'chein chaya v'ov kayotze behem. And again, when we say animals, we don't just simply mean the domesticated animals, but we even mean the non-domesticated animals, chaya. And it even means birds as well. All these are included in all 8 of these mitzvahs that the Mishnah just went through. Im kein, lama nema shor chamor. So let's ask a simple question. If the mitzvah is not limited to any specific type of animal, why in all of the occasions in the Torah speaks to shor v'chamor as the 2 examples? So Allah shadibra kasa behova. So the Gemara says, because the Torah was talking to its modern audience, I don't mean modern now, but I mean at the time when the Torah was written, so the Torah was designed to be speaking to its specific audience, and back in the good old days, shor v'chamor were the popular animals. But the truth of the matter is that the halach is, it's not limited to those animals, it's just diber kasev behovah. Okay, and we start with the Gemara. The Gemara, we're on Nun Dal Amud Beis. We're starting, it's halfway down. This is where the Gemara begins. Gemara over here is going to be citing sources for every one of these halachas that we just went through. So we start off with number one. How do I know that when an animal falls into a pit, there's going to be a liability regardless of what animal falls into the pit? So the Torah says, Katsef Yashila Balav. So you return money to the owner. I'm sorry, Ksiv. Called the Islay Balin. Kidamaran. Anything that has an owner, meaning an animal that has an owner, is subject to getting compensated, reimbursed for the damage that's done. We pointed out in yesterday's daf, Kalim also have an owner, and people also could have an owner, meaning Evakanani, Shivka Kananis, but we already pointed out in yesterday's daf that there are Miyutim. The Torah specifically limits them based on the extra words of Shur V'chamur. Okay, but in other words, animals. Specific to animals. That was number one. Two, Hafrashas Har Sinai, the mitzvah of making sure that the animals do not cross the line by Mamad Har Sinai. So, Im Behema, Im Ish Lo Yechyeh. So, the Torah says that a Behema, together with a person, will not live if they cross over that line by Mamad Har Sinai. V'chaya B'chla Behema Havya. And we know that when the Torah says Chaya, Chaya is included in, even if the Torah doesn't say Chaya, Chaya is included in Behema, meaning the Behema is a larger term that describes all animals, even the non-domesticated animals, and Im L'Rabbos is Ha'ofos, and the word Im is coming to include even birds as well. So in other words, no animals are allowed to cross over the line by Mamad Har Sinai. Now we're up to the next one, Teshlum Mekefa Kedamrinan. Now as far as Teshlum Mekefa, how do I know that if I steal an animal and I'm caught with the animal that I stole, that I have to not only make restitution of the animal, but I also have to pay back double? And when we get to the seventh parak of Baba Kama, coming up now, two parakim from now, hopefully by the end of this morning, one parak from now. So how do I know that it applies to all animals? Kid to Amrina, the Gemara says, we said it, meaning we will say it. I'll call Davar Pesha, Klal, Kol Davar Pshia. It includes anything that you are poshea over, meaning any animal. Hashavas Aveda, the mitzvah of returning a lost item. If I find somebody's animal, I have to return the animal. And it applies to any animal that was lost. The Torah says, L'chol Aveda Sachicha. So it says anything that was lost by your brother. Prika, in terms of the mitzvah of unloading an animal, if there's too much loaded on the animal. Yalev chamor, chamor mishabbos. We're going to learn how to gzer shava from Shabbos. Chasima, not muzzling an animal while it's plowing. It applies to all animals. However, I know that. Yalif, sure, mishabbos. So once again, this is gzer shava coming from Shabbos. Now, we haven't cited the source yet from Shabbos. That's coming up in just a moment. Kalayim. So the Gemara says, now we're talking about crossing. Now, the Gemara acknowledges there are two types of kalayim as it relates to animals. Eklayim, decharisha, yalif, sure, mishabbos. If we're talking about plowing, meaning the prohibition in the Torah of not having two different animals plow together, so that we learn out from gzer shava, from Shabbos. Eklayim, daharva, if we're talking about crossing, meaning mating, so yalef bamtecha mishabbos. So there too, we also have another gzer shava connecting it to Shabbos. So we have a lot of these mitzvos where the source of the halacha that it applies to all animals comes from Shabbos. So it of course begs the next question: well, how do I know by Shabbos? The Gavi Shabbos Menalim, the Tanya Rabbi Yossi Amar Mishum Rabbi Shmuel. So the Gemara says it's based on the following. When we have the Aser HaDibros repeated twice in the Torah, once in Parshas Yisro, a second time in Parshas Ve'eschanan. So you'll notice some of the nuanced differences between the way the Pesukim are written in both locations. In the Dibros Rishonos by Yisro, it says Avdecha V'amascha V'hemtecha. Says animals. Then v'divrei achronos ne'amar v'shorcha v'chamorcha. It says shor v'chamor v'chol behemtecha and all animals. Now, question: v'halo shor v'chamor bechlal kol behema? I don't understand. Shor v'chamor is obviously included in kol behema. Hayu v'lama yatsu. So why did the Torah specifically point them out when in the Aser HaDibros, it actually says, "Kol behemtecha, yatzulam lecham, asher v'chamor amor kan, chay v'ov kayotze behem, avkol chay v'ov kayotze behem." So here's where the Torah wants to teach us a model lesson, which is that even though it says asher v'chamor, it actually includes all animals. And that means now that any time in the Torah points to the examples of asher v'chamor, it means all animals in the Torah. Okay. And Ema, the Gemara says, well, Let's consider the following. Behema de Dibras Rishonis Klal. Let's consider that the Torah says the words Behemtecha by the Dibras Rishonis, by the first of the Aseres, first time of the Aseres of Dibras, and that will call Klal. Shurvecha v'chamurcha de Dibras Achronis Prat. And then the two examples cited in the Dibras Achronis is considered the examples, the Prat. Klal of Prat, Imbakal, Amashab Prat. So the Gemara is making a Klal of Prat based on the Aseres, the Dibras Rishonis and the Dibras Achronis. It should bother you. The Dibras Rishonis are located all the way in the middle of Sefer Shmos, right? 20th chapter of Sefer Shmos. And then the Dibras Achronos, so that's located in Devarim, in the fifth parak of Devarim. So that's far away from one another. We generally say Klal Prat when it's usually in the same pasuk, maybe one pasuk after another, but they're so far apart from one another, how could we call this a Klal Prat? Tosus is bothered by that question. Top Tosus on the Amud, and Tosus says Shamar v'Zachar b'Dibur Echad, meaning that the Aseres HaDibros mentioned the first time and the Aseres HaDibros mentioned the second time are Dibur Echad, meaning it's all the same. It was stated together, right? How can a Kadosh Baruch Hu say Shamar v'Zachar b'Dibur Echad? So the answer is obvious, meaning the answer is built into the question. He's a Kadosh Baruch Hu. He can do that. The idea is that they are. It's one and the same. So therefore, when you're noticing a klal in one place and a prat in the other place, so now you can put together the principle of klal of prat. So once we're putting together the principle of klal of prat, so the Gemara is now in the middle of a question. Question, if we're going to apply the principle of klal of prat, what do we have now? We have behemtecha klal, shor v'chamor prat, and we know the rule is ein b'chlal shema b'prat, and that means back to the Gemara shor v'chamor in midach rin lo. So that would mean then that the only prohibition of Shabbos is that your shor v'chamor should not work. All your other animals presumably would be allowed to work. V'chol b'hemtecha de dibros ha'achronos chas v'chlal. So midach rin lo, comma. Amri, so when they heard this question in the base measures, they said the following. So, because if you look in the Dibras Achronos, it doesn't just say Shur V'chamor, it says Shur V'chamor, and it says V'chol Behemtecha. So that now falls under the category of Klal Uprat Uklal. Klal Uprat Uklal. Kol Balechayim, so that means now that the two animals cited in the middle are simply examples, but it comes to include all animals. So the Gemara says, fine, but the two examples in the middle are animals that are subject to Tumas Magamasa, meaning if those animals die without a Shechita, then the carcasses are going to give off Tuma, and the communication of that Tuma is going to come through both contact and through carrying. But that would mean then, however, birds do not fall under this category, because birds do not give off tumas magomasa for the nevela. Yes, if you eat the carcass of a bird, you're going to be tame, but that's a different type of tuma. That's not the tuma of magomasa. So Amri, so when they heard this question, the yeshiva, they said the following. Imke nechter chman achad. Prata. Well, the Torah would only need to then write one of the examples. So the Gemara says, and this should sound familiar, because we had exactly the same give and take in yesterday's daf. Ha'nichtav Rachmanah. The Gemara says, okay, which one should the Torah have written? Ikas Rachmanah Shor, and the Torah says, look, the Gemara says, look, it would have been misleading had the Torah only written Shor, Havamina Krav Lagabe Mizbech, and Shein Krav Lagabe Mizbech, lo. I would have thought the prohibition of Shvisas Behemto would only apply to animals where it is fit to be brought onto the Mizbech if the Torah only would have given the example of Shor. So therefore, Kasav Rachmanah Chamor, that's why the Torah had to say the word Chamor, Vikas Rachmanah Chamor, and if the Torah only written Chamor, Havamina Kashba Bechara in Shein Kashba Bechara, lo. I would have thought that the prohibition of Shitat Behemta would only apply to animals that are subject to Kedushas Bechor, like the Chamor. The Chamor, even though it's a non-kosher animal, firstborn Chamor is Kadosh. And parenthetically, you're supposed to redeem it. And you redeem it with a Seh. Right, Parshas, end of Parshas Bo. Anyway, Shein Kadosh B'Bechor Lo, Kazer Rechmana Shur. So that's why the Torah has to write Shur. We already pointed out yesterday, Shur is also Kadosh B'Bechor. So it's a little interesting that the additional word is really not categorically different. But anyway, we pointed that out yesterday. So Ela V'Chol B'Hemtecha Ribu Yehu. So the Gemara says, fine. You've argued successfully that the Torah could not just write Shor or Chamor. The Torah needed to write both. You made that argument very good. So the Gemara says, excuse me, that the reason why we know that by Shabbos it applies to all animals, meaning we have a klal prada klal. The Gemara acknowledges that's true, but the reason why we know that the Isser in the Torah of Shchitas Behemta applies to all animals is because it says kol behemtacha, and the word kol is a ribuy, it's an inclusionary word which includes all animals. Ribuyehu v'chol hecha dekazav rachmana kol. Ribuyehu, is that true? Every single time you see the word kol, it's a ribuy. V'hagabe meiser dichsiv, the Gemara says, we'll consider the following. By meiser, the Torah says kol v'kadashin alei b'chol afrat. We're going to see the psukim together by meiser sheni, where the Torah uses the word kol, and we're going to classically darshan it in the method of klal uprat uklal. Let's go through the example. D'tanya, minasata katz b'chol asher tava nafshecha klal. We have the mitzvah of meiser sheni is that every first, second, fourth, and fifth year of the Shemitah cycle. So the second 10% that you take off the first 10% is always going to go to the Levi. That's called Maaser Rishon. The second 10% you take off in years 1, 2, 4, and 5 is Maaser Sheni. That is going to have Kedusha. That food you're supposed to bring up to Yerushalayim and eat in Yerushalayim, if it's inconvenient, so you take the food and you're potent onto money, you take the money up to Yerushalayim, next time you go up there, which is probably going to be Yantif, and you're going to redeem that money on food. You're going to buy food with that money, and that's what we're learning together right now. You're going to take the money, and you're going to get whatever you'd like. Now, klal, that's a general rule. And then the Torah gives four examples. Cattle, sheep, wine and old wine. So that's pra. Those are examples. Uvichol asher tish alcha nafshecha. Then the Torah says, whatever you'd like. So this is a classic example of klal upradu klal. Chazur klal, klal upradu klal, liatadan elakena prat, mahaprat mefurash pri, mi pri vigidule karka. The examples over here are things that regenerate, meaning fruit, take the seed, plant it, you get fruit again. Animals, right, procreation, so, and you start again, and also gedulei karka, and also they grow from the ground. That's interesting. We certainly know that wine grows from the ground, animals grow from the ground, so yes, they get their nourishment from the ground. So, and right, sometimes the Gemara refers to animals as gedulei karka, other times the Gemara does not refer to animals as gedulei karka. You can see the last Tosfos on this Amud that raises that issue and notes the discrepancy. The Tosfos says, now is not the time. I know I say this often, but Tosfos actually says it. Now is not the time to talk about it. Okay. Right? Look at the end of the Tosfos. Ein la'arich kan yoser. I don't want to go on about this issue. But yes, sometimes the animal are called gedulei karka, sometimes they're not. Anyway, our Gemara right now is in the middle of a question. What just happened? We had a usage of a pasuk in the method, in darshaning, in the method of klal uprat uklal, and what does the Torah say over there? It says the word kol. You were arguing just a moment ago that the word kol is a ribuy, it's an inclusionary term, and therefore it breaks the rules of klal uprat uklal. Meanwhile, we have just cited nearly an identical example where it's klal uprat uklal and the Torah uses the word over there, kol. So, av kol primi pri gedulei karka. So, this now presents a problem. You said that kol is inclusionary. Meanwhile, kol, we just darshan through klal uprat uklal. Amrei. When they heard this in the base medrash, they answered the following. Ba kol klala. Kol ribuye. So it's a nuanced answer. It's a very specific answer. And that is that it depends how the word kol comes up in the Torah and how it's conjugated. If it's bakol, like we saw by Meister Sheni, so then that is it's klal uprat uklal. However, if it's just the word kol by itself, so then it's a ribuy, then it's inclusionary. By Shabbos, it says kol, so therefore it's inclusionary and includes all animals. Now, Ibai, Sam the Gemara says, I'll give you a second answer, which already gives us an indication that first answer is difficult. Okay, so generally speaking, with the more answers you see, right, the less confident we are with every particular answer.
The first one wasn't
accepted. I don't want to say that. I avoided saying that, but if the Gemara is giving a second answer, it speaks about how, you know, the confidence it has in the first answer. Ibai thema kol nami kol lahu. Now the word kol, even without the bays in front of it, also generally falls under the category of klal prado klal, like we saw by Meister Sheni. And miyu hai kol dahacha ribuyehu. But the kol mentioned by Shabbos is ribuy. How do I know that? Medahavel lemichtav uvehemtecha. Because the word kol over there was totally unnecessary. The Torah could have gotten away without even writing the word kol. Ki dechsiv b'dibros rishonos. In fact, it says in the dibros rishonos dechsiv v'chol b'emtecha. B'dibros rishonos v'kas v'chol b'emtecha. So you see that. Meaning, it's even a more powerful argument than it's unnecessary. It's the argument of the Torah already wrote this parsha once before by Dibros Rishonos, and it didn't even include the word kol. Mm-hmm. So the fact that we're arguing the Torah didn't need to write it, we know the Torah didn't need to write it because we saw it happen once before. So the fact by the Dibros Achronos it says the words behemtecha and it also says the word kol, and it was totally unnecessary to do that. Now that tells us that's a ribuy, shmamina ribuye. So therefore we see it's a ribuy, and that's why by Shabbos it refers to all animals. How should Damar call Ribuyihu? Behemtecha de Dibras Rishon of Vishur Vechamor de Dibras Rechon Islamale. So the Gemara says, okay, now I know that by Shvisas Behemto, the mitzvah of Shabbos, where you have to make sure that your animals do not work on Shabbos. So now that we have the word kol, and kol comes to include every animal, so allow us to ask such a simple question. Why does the Torah seem to take us on somewhat of a circuitous route, and it's even more than circuitous. It's a little bit misleading, giving us examples of Shur V'chamor, mentioning Behema, meaning kol. Kol tells us that it's every animal. So once again, the base measures, they ask that question, but they answer in the following. Shur Lagmuri, Shur Lechasima. So the Gemara says, to extend this halacha to all the other areas that we discussed in our Mishnah. So, the shur over there is to teach us Xerishava to Chasima, that muzzling an animal, the isra of muzzling an animal while it's threshing in your fields. So, it applies to all animals. How do I know that? Based on the Xerishava to Shabbos. Chamor lagmur, chamor laprika. Your animal is overloaded, overburdened. So there's a mitzvah to help the owner of the animal unburden the animal. And applies to all animals. And behemtecha lagmur, behemtecha leklayim. And the word behema is there to teach us that the iser of crossing applies to all animals. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, well, there should be a prohibition in the Torah of klayim as applies to animals and people. Now, to make this Gemara not as indelicate as it sounds, we're not talking about mating, we're talking here about working together. Meaning, why is there no prohibition of having a plow fixed to an animal on one side and a person on the other side? So the Gemara says, Alama Tanan, and meanwhile we know the halacha is Adam Motor Im Kulam, Lachrosh Vlim Shoch. And a person is allowed to be fixed, to be hooked up to a plow together with an animal. And that's not an Isser of Kalim. The Isser of Kalim is hooking up two different animals together. But animal and human is fine. But the Gemara says, but if the source of this halacha is coming from Shabbos, we know who has to be Shomer Shabbos, your animals, and you. So if that's the source of the halacha of Kalayim, so then the Isser of Kalayim should apply to you and animals as well. Amar Papa, Papunai Yadai, Tamadah Milsa. Rav Papa says, if you go to the people of Papunai, they know how to explain this. Uman Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, and we're speaking specifically about one of the members of the people of Papunai, Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, Amakra, Lamayanuch, Avdecha, Vamatecha, Kamocha. Lahanacha Ikshita Velola Dava Acher. So there is a Hekesh, but the Hekesh is only, it's a limited Hekesh. It only comes to, it's limited only to Shabbos. But in other words, it doesn't extend to other areas of Halacha. So yes, by Shabbos there is a hekesh between you and your animals, but that's only vis-a-vis resting on Shabbos. As far as now developing this hekesh and extending it to other areas of halacha, that we do not do. Okay. A little bit of agadah, it's been a while. A little bit of agadah. Shav Rabbi Chanina ben Agil es Rabbi Chia bar Abba mime ma b'dibros rishonos lenemar b'hem tov v'dibros achronos nemar b'hem tov. You can make an entire study of this, contrasting the Dibros Rishonos and the Dibros Achronos. Now, the reason why the Gemara is inserting this over here is because we just did essentially that. Meaning we did that in terms of halacha. But now we're doing it in terms of hashkafa / agadita. We're comparing and contrasting the Dibros Rishonos and Dibros Achronos. You'll notice that in the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em, mentioned in the Dibros Rishonos, it doesn't say by the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em, Laman Yitav Lach. And meanwhile, you go to the Dibros Achronos, you open up to Parshas Veschanan, and you get to the fifth of the Aseres Dibros, and at the end, at the conclusion, it says, Laman Yitav Lach. So it says Tov in the Dibros Achronos, and it does not say the word Tov in the Dibros Rishonos. Why not? Amar Lo, we're now on the top of Nun Hamad Aleph. Acha atashoalan lama nemra behem tov, shalani im nemra behem tov im lo, im lav. She'eni yodea im nemra behem tov im lav. So, and now an answer which is in of itself rather than a remarkable answer. And he says, well, that's a good question, but you can even ask me a more basic question. You can even ask me whether or not he even says the word tov. Meaning, I couldn't even start off with answering your question of on which one does it say tov and which one does it not say tov. Now, the Mefarshim of the Gemara really struggle with this answer. And Amara is essentially saying to another Amara, I don't even know if it says tov or it doesn't. So how can you ask me a question now about why it says here and why it doesn't say over here? I don't even know whether it even says it. Is the Amara not familiar with the Psukim? Is that what he's really saying? It's hard to imagine. There is a Tosus in Baba Basra that gives that indication. Anyway, it's a difficult response. It definitely needs more clarification. Huh? Right. It's an astounding answer. So Klach Eitzer Rabbi Tanchum Bar Chanilai Shaya Ragel Eitzer Rabbi Yeshua Ben Levi. So I'm going to direct you to the right person for the right answer. So go to Rabbi Tanchum Bar Chanilai, who frequently visited Rabbi Yeshua Ben Levi. Shaya Baki Bagadi. He's an expert in Agadata. Azulah Gabei. So we went to Marmalay Mimenu Lo Shamati. He says, look, I'm going to be honest. I didn't hear an answer to this question. Alakach Amelishmo Bar Nachum Achi Moshe Rav Acha Rabbi Chanina. Okay, two different versions in terms of who he was the nephew of, but either way, answer. Kadosh Baruch Hu had no concept of time, meaning he's above time, so he knew that the Dibros Rishonos are going to be broken. So he did not want the word Tov to be included in the Dibros Rishonos because he knew they were going to be broken. So the Gemara says, V'chisofen lishtaber mayhave. So the Gemara says, okay, and so what? So, Amar Rav Ashi chas v'shalom paska tova misrawa. So Rav Ashi's response to that is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not want tova to conclude from the Jewish people. He didn't want to be removed from the Jewish people. As a result of that, it was not included in the Dibros Rishonos. I'm not going to try to convince you that I fully understand this dialogue. I have a basic idea of what's going on over here, but obviously this dialogue is embedded in it. Soda Satorah, some of the more powerful ideas in the Torah, and I'm not in a position to properly communicate these ideas because I don't understand. But the basic idea is that Kadosh Baruch Hu knew that the Dibros Rishonos are going to be broken, therefore he refrained from writing Ki Yitav Lach in the Dibros Rishonos, and he wrote in the Dibros Achronos. Okay.
Then we said like before that the two Dibros were said
right,
simultaneously.
Right.
So in Mela, it says one time Laman Yitav Lach was said.
Okay. But then if that's true, meaning I understand what you're saying. What you're saying makes a lot of sense. So then what was the entire discussion that the Gemara just had over here? Okay. Again, this is, I'm admitting I'm in over my head in terms of understanding. I'm Rav Yeshua Haroa Tesbechlamo Simon Yafalo. The Gemara at the end of Brachos goes over a lot of meaning of dreams, right? You see this in a dream, it means this. You see this in a dream, it means this. Dream interpretation. I know the early psychologists have kind of like hijacked that entire discussion, but it's something which we have had in the Gemara for now a couple thousand years, right? 1,500 years, if you want to be a little more exact. But We've had it for a long time. So here at the end of the fifth parak of Baba Kama, the Gemara speaks a little bit about dream interpretation. You see a test, the letter test in a dream, so Simon Yafalo, that's a good sign. My Taima, so Elam and Mishim Dechsiv Tov, so the Gemara says, well, you know, the word Tov starts with the letter test. So Ema, so the Gemara says, V'tata Seh, V'tate Hashemed, Gemara says, I'll show you Psukim in Tanakh where there's a letter test and it's not good. So for example, over here, I'm going to destroy you like the broom sweeps it out. So Chad Tes Kamrin, the Gemara says, yeah, but we're talking about one letter test. So Ema Tum Asa B'Shulah, so the Gemara says, yeah, but you can't do that. In other words, I'll show you Psukim in Tanakh where you see that it's a phrase with only one letter test and it's not good. Right? You will be defiled. So test Bez Kamrina. So the Gemara suggests, well, maybe it is what he saw in the dream was the letter test followed by the letter Bez, and that's good because those are most of the letters of the word Tov. Ema Tavu Ba'arsha Areha. So the Gemara says, yeah, but consider that we have another pasuk. This is coming up in Eicha. The last two pasukim we just quoted in the Gemara coming from Eicha, which obviously, in other words, the Gemara is looking for phrases in Tanakh that are bad. Eicha is a good source for that for those kinds of pasukim. So three short weeks from now, we're going to be hearing this pasukim in Shul. So Tavu Be'er Shara, they drowned in the land of their residence. So once again, that's a word in the Torah, phrase in the Torah with the letter tes, with the letter beis, and it's not good. So Ella, so the Gemara says, fine, a new explanation. Meaning, we're going to go back to our original statement. You see the letter tes in your dream, that's a good thing. And the reason why, Elohoel upasach ba kasav the tova tchila, shemi brachus ad vayar lekim as or ki tov, and that tov is the first time in Chumash the letter tes is found. So really, you're talking about like critical reading of the Chumash, meaning look in the Torah where the first time the letter tes is found, and you're going to see that's really going to be the defining point of that letter. So you see that the first time the letter tes is found is ki tov, lo kasav tes. So up until that point in time, the letter tes was not written. So that really is the defining moment of that letter. It's a good letter. You see in the dream, it's gonna, it'll be good. I'm Rabbi Shua Ben Levi Haroa Sefer. I'm sorry, Haroa has spayed bechalamo chaso olav min shemaim upadua. So let's say you get eulogized in your dream. So that means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had Rachmanis upon you, meaning that really there should have been a eulogy, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu had Rachmanis upon you, and you were redeemed. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a consideration not to. Now, Vahani Mili B'Ksav of the Gemara says, but this is only a good interpretation of the dream, not if you hear the eulogy, but you actually have to see it inside. Meaning it had in your dream it had to have been written down, and you had to see it in writing. Okay. Okay. We are talking now, we're finishing up the perek, and just the last comments of the Gemara over here at the end of the fifth perek have to do with crossing animals. So, because we said that not only is there an issur in the Torah of crossing domesticated animals, but chayvof, even non-domesticated animals, even birds. Amar Shlakish Kanshan Rebbe Tanagol Tavasu Pisione Klaim Zebize. Different types of birds, you'll forgive me, I'm just any translation I give is just not going to be, well, you know, it'll be just an attempt. Okay, Pisione is a type of quail, the tarnagol is a chicken, and the tavas, I don't know, huh? Peacock. They call it a peacock? Okay. Different types of birds climb zebizeh. So if you make an attempt to cross these animals, you are violating the prohibition of the Torah of climb. Pshita, the Gemara says, now, tell you the truth, without the Gemara, without the statement of Reish Lakish, I would have known this. So Amar of Chaviva Mishum Darko, Derabu Bahade Hadade. So the Gemara says, yeah, but I'll tell you why you would have thought these things are different over here. They grow up together, meaning that when they are raised basically in the same farm, in the same general area. So Mao Detema Min Chadhu. So I might have thought that basically, okay, it's one species. Kamashmon, the Gemara says, no. The fact that they're raised together does not mean that they're one species. Amashmol Ives ve Ives Habar Klaim Zebizeh. Another example, a goose and a wild goose If you mate them together, you're in violation of Kalayim. They are different species. And the Gemara basically wants to know, why are they under two different species? So maybe it has to do with the beak. Right? If you take a look at Rashi over here, Rashi actually tells you that the word kuai, which I probably am mispronouncing, the word kuai is a reference to a beak. So maybe it's because of the different types of beaks. Elamiata, gamala parso, gamala taya, the high alim kuai, the high katin kuai, hachinamidava climb zebizet. The Gemara says no. Just because they have one feature that's different from one another, the Gemara says that's not enough to make them two different species. Consider that you have camels, you have the Persian camel and the Arabian camel. And they have different features, but they're both camels. If I mate the two of them together, I'm not in violation of Kalayim. So just because they have slightly different features, does not mean they're different species. So, two answers the Gemara is going to give. The first answer the Gemara is its reproductive organ. The reproductive organ on one type is internal, and the reproductive organ on the other type is external. Okay, the little that I know about birds, all birds' reproductive organs are internal, not external. So I'm not following the Gemara over here. But okay, that's just simply because I don't know enough about the Ives and the Ives Abar. So I just know what the little information that I know. So obviously my understanding is limited. Rav Papa Amar Hatuna Chad Biyasa B'Shichla V'Hatuna Kama Biyasa B'Shichla. Another reason why categorically they belong in two different species and therefore crossing them is a violation of Kalayim is because one lays an egg one at a time, the other one lays multiple eggs at a time, so therefore they are of two different species. Okay. Amar of Yirmiya Amar Reish Lakish. Probably, by the way, I'm not saying this. This is all put this under the category of speculation. Or in other words, the other species is probably not a bird. It's probably something more like a platypus. Like in other words, it's got to be something that is fundamentally different and therefore falls into two different species. Okay. Amar of Yirmiya Amar Reish Lakish. Hamar Viyish Neiminim Shebeyam Loke. Okay, this is an interesting Gemara. Gemara says over here that if I cross two animals that are in the water, what I'll say right now, fish, although I realize what I'm saying is strange, but if I'm crossing fish together, Loki, you're subject to Malchus, meaning you're violating the Isser in the Torah of Kalayim, of crossing. Is there, first of all, even an ability to cross fish? To mate different fish together. So if you take a look at the second Tosfos over here, so Tosfos says that one of the Balei Tosfos gets to this Gemara, and he was Magia, and he edited our Gemara. Meaning, no, you can't read the Gemara as it is. Right? Take a look at the second Tosfos over here. Rebbe Rav Yehuda haya Magia hamanhig beis minim shebiyam loke. Okay, that's an important editorial note. Meaning not marvia. Marvia means actually crossing them together, meaning mating them together. So the Balei Tosfos, one of the Balei Tosfos says no. What actually the Gemara over here means is manhig, meaning hooking each one up and having them pull you, right? You go to the seaquarium, so right. So you see them, putting some sort of leash on. You see it. Anyway, you see them put leashes on the dolphins and they're riding the dolphins. Okay, so, but the Balei Tosfos says that's what the Gemara here is referring to. Not crossing, but having them work together. Having them, I'd say plow, but we're talking about in the water. Mishum de Bebreshes Rabba V'Yushami. I'm just reading on a little bit more in the Tosfos. Mishum de Bebreshes Rabba V'Yushami Deklayim Mashma De'i Efshar Laharvia Dagim. You cannot be Marvia Dagim. In other words, it's physically impossible to do so. Tosfos, however, points out you don't have to edit our Gemara, meaning you can leave our Gemara as it is. If just read a little bit more in the Tosfos, Omiyo ain't sarach lahagia. You don't have to edit to the Gemara. The dagim dafka hu demashma de ain laharvia. Aval min chayos ayam shaych bei iser hava. V'hacha ikaluk me bimin chayos sheyachol adam laharvia. Gemara says, you made an assumption that we were talking about fish. Not necessarily. It could be that we're talking simply about water creatures, aquatic creatures. It doesn't have to be just limited to fish. It right could be a seal, could be a porpoise. In other words, we're just simply talking about animals that exist in the water. And it doesn't have to be just fish, and you can leave the Gemara as it is. An interesting discussion within Tosfos. Back to our Gemara. Sorry, I lost my spot. Amar Rav Yirmiyah Amar Reish Lakish. Amar Rav Yirmiyah Minim Shabayam Loka. My time Amar Vad Rava Mishmei De'ula Asya Leminei Leminei Miyabasha. Okay, learn it out through Gzera Shava. Baruch Hava Amanik Be'iza V'shibuta Mahu. Okay, let's say you're right by the riverbank. You hook up one side of the plow to a goat, and the other harness of the plow you hook up to, let's just say, a porpoise. Not a porpoise, the shibuta. It's a type of fish. So now you're having two different animals pull the plow together, which generally speaking is a prohibition of the Torah, but one is a land animal and the other is a fish. Have you violated the prohibition of the Torah of Kelayim? Mahu. Mi amrin kevin diiza lo nachas biyam v'shivuta lo selek liyabasha lo klum avid. So one argument you can make is that this is so beyond kelayim, meaning and a goat doesn't go in the water and the shibuta doesn't come on the land. So it's not even like, it's like you're beyond even the threshold of kelayim. Kelayim is having two different land animals work together or two different aquatic animals work together. But this is like beyond. Oh, Dilma, hashna mia kamanig. Or on the other hand, you actually have two different animals pulling together the plow, and therefore you're in violation of kelayim. Maskala ravina lamiata chiber chita v'sara biyada v'zara chita baretz v'sara b'chutz aretz achinami demechayev. So the Gemara says, well, consider, I take wheat and barley, and I'm right on the border of Eretz Yisrael, and I plant one seed on one side of the border and another seed on the other side of the border. And you mean to tell me that you're violating Kelayim? And the Gemara's assumption going into this question is, you're not violating Kelayim? The Isser in the Torah of Kelayim is only in Eretz Yisrael, not, meaning in the land. Agriculture Kelayim is only in Eretz Yisrael, not outside of Eretz Yisrael. Amri Hachi Hashtu, the Gemara says that was a terrible comparison. Hasam Eretz Makum Chiyuva Chutz Aretz Lo Makum Chiyuva. When I took the wheat and the barley and I planted it on two sides of the border of Eretz Yisrael, so the one that was outside of Eretz Yisrael is not a makam chiyuv. There's no prohibition to cross seeds outside of Eretz Yisrael. However, hacha idi chiyuvahu. But over here, the prohibition of working two different animals together apply both on the land and in the sea. So it's really not a great comparison, and the Gemara leaves this question off unresolved. If I were to harness together a land and aquatic animal together, am I violating the Isser of Kelayim? Hajon Alach Shor Shenagach Esapara. That is the end of the fifth paragraph of the Masechta. Right for agriculture. Right. Okay. All right, we are now on the top of Nun Hey Amud Beis. We are starting the Mishnah today. Okay, we have one more parak to go, and I mean by that the following. Baba Kama can be divided into two parts, but the break in Baba Kama is not at the midway point. We are at the midway point. There are 10 parakim in total Baba Kama. We've just finished the first 5 parakim, Baruch Hashem, and we are now entering the what you could call the second half of the Masechta. But really, in terms of theme, in terms of topic, we are not in the second half of the Masechta. Second half of the Masechta starts in the 7th parak of Baba Kama. We have one more parak to go in discussing Nezikin, meaning the topic of damages and what is defined as a damage, the 4 different categories of damage, and all the subcategories and the sub-discussions of damages are covered in parakim 1 through 6. So this parak over here represents the last of the parak that discusses the topic of Nezek. And then in the 7th parak, we move topics. 7th parak, we talk about Geneva Gzela, stealing and theft. So this is, even though the second half of the Masechta, it's not the second half. It's still thematically the first half of the Masechta. Hakonetzon ledir, v'nal b'fanal karoi. So you take sheep and you pen it up, and v'nal b'fanal karoi, and you do so what the Mishnah describes as appropriately. Now, what the Mishnah means by appropriately is you do the base amount of protection and guarding so that the animal does not break free. Okay. Just as an interesting note, by the way, the Meiri points out that the Hakonet Stone Ladir, the penning up of these sheep, was for a very specific purpose. I say this by just by way of interest. It's the Meiri who makes a comment. He says that, generally speaking, these animals get penned up because the owner of the field wants his land fertilized. So what he'll do is he'll take a whole bunch of sheep, he'll put them into a concentrated area, he'll let the sheep graze over there, and the sheep will graze over there, and they're also going to fertilize the area. So so that's, generally speaking, why a person wants to pen them up. Either way. Okay? So if you pen them up and you do the base amount of shmira to these animals, the yatzavah hizika, and the animals break free and they do damage, putter, you're going to be exempt from any subsequent damage that they did. Why? Because you did what you were supposed to do. You locked them up. It was not a great enclosure. Doesn't matter. In terms of liability, you don't need great. Good is good enough, and it'll exempt you from any damages that it goes out and does. However, if, let's say, you don't pen them up correctly and you left the door open and they go out and they do damage, you're going to be held accountable and liable for all the damages that occurs. If, let's say, they break out at night, or let's say robbers break into your house and because they broke into the house, now there is a gap in the wall of the pen because the robbers broke in. Robbers didn't even go after the sheep. They went right past the sheep. They went into your house. But in other words, now that the sheep broke out, is not your fault. In other words, that's what's called an ones. And therefore, putter, then you're going to be exempt. What about the robbers themselves? Shouldn't they be held accountable for what they did? Meaning they're the ones who caused the animals to go out. Stay tuned. We're going to be discussing that question in tomorrow's daf. Now, if the listim themselves actually physically take the animals out, so then the listim are going to be liable for the damages that the sheep do. Okay, and again, tomorrow we're going to discuss more of that in detail. Just as an interesting point, if the animals break out at night, so the Mishnah says you're going to be potter. Okay, why? So Tosos says one of two reasons. The second explanation of Tosos is fascinating. The first explanation of Tosos is because you probably didn't know about it, meaning it's ones. The animals broke out at night, right? In the good old days, you were probably in the barn. You were in the farmhouse. You were sleeping. They broke out and you didn't know about it. That's the first explanation Tosus gives. Tosus gives a second explanation, which is really interesting. Inami, it's the second Tosos. It's halfway down the second Tosos. But Laila, filo noda lo shenifrit saviyatsa behema ein lo lichorch yosem idai lechazer chareh ba'afela. Tosus in his second answer says, you know what? Even if you do know that your animals broke out at night, it's not a fair expectation that you should have to go out in the middle of the night in order to chase down your sheep. Meaning, you'll get them tomorrow morning. And as a result, even if you know that the animals broke out at night, you're not expected to go fetch them, and therefore you're going to be exempt from the damage that they do. That's interesting. It needs an explanation. More hesber. Back to our Mishnah. Let's say you handed over your animals to somebody who is not cognitively able to wash the animals, and the animals go out and do damage. You're going to be chayev. Yeah, because by handing it over to them, effectively you let them loose. When you hand your animals over to a shepherd, the shepherd now becomes the address of who's responsible for these animals when they damage. Let's say your animal slips, falls, and falls into someone else's garden and damages. So you don't have to pay for the damages because that's what's called ones. But if your animal now helped himself and ate in that other field, so like we discussed earlier in the Masechta, we're saying it again right now, that saved you a meal. So you have to pay for that. You don't have to pay for the damages, but you have to pay for the benefit that your animal that now you don't have to buy a meal. And we pointed out earlier in the Masechta, that means that you get to only have to pay a discounted version of whatever your animal ate. Let's say your animal did not slip and fall. Let's say your animal walked into someone else's property and ate on that person's property. Now you have to pay for the damages. Now, your animal goes into someone else's property and damages the other person's property. You have to pay for the damages. How do we assess? So it's very similar to an idea that we talked about earlier. We don't actually assess based on the food that they ate, but based on the value of the property. How much is the property worth before your animal went and ate that roe? How much is that property worth now? This form of appraisal is going to serve as a benefit to the mazik. Because now, that differential is a smaller differential than if we were to assess the actual fruit that was eaten. Because the fruit were connected to the ground, we don't view the fruit independent from the ground. And so therefore, our appraisal of damage is done within the context of the land itself. On this very point, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Achla Peres Gemurim, Mishalemes Peres Gemurim, Im Sa Asayim. Rabbi Shimon says, I'm going to disagree in the following. Let's say the animal did eat off the ground, but he ate fruit that were fully ripened, even though they were still connected to the ground. Rabbi Shimon says, under those circumstances, the assessment's done, not within the context of the land, but the actual value of the fruit. Despite the fact that the fruit is connected to the ground, because they're fully ripened, Rabbi Shimon will tell you, I view them as if they are already disconnected, and therefore the appraisal is done based on the value of the fruit itself. Tana Rabbanan. Let's start with the Gemara. Ezu karai ve'ezu shlo karai. We say appropriate, not appropriate penning of the animals, enclosures. So the Gemara says, let's give some sort of better description. If it's a door that can withstand a regular wind, so that is considered good enclosure. Again, not great, good. However, if the door can't even withstand a regular wind, so that's not even good. Meaning, that's nothing. So, Amar Rabbani Bar Patish Mantana Muad Desagale Bishmer Pechusa Rabbi Yehudahi. Did not. The Gemara takes us back to a mission that we saw earlier together. And that is, Rabbi Yehuda's position is that when your animal is a tam, you need Shmira Ma'ula. You need to guard the animal with a great enclosure, a solid enclosure. And then once your animal becomes a muad, Rabbi Yehuda says you only need a basic enclosure. I mentioned already a couple times in this Masechta, that's not intuitive. You would think that the more your animal has went down and damaged, the greater shmir you would need. So, but we already learned it together, this opinion of Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah. We're going to review the Mishnah right now. And they base it on Pesukim. I mentioned the Meiri earlier. In the Masechta, the Meiri said, once the animal becomes a muad, so then people know that they should be cautious of this animal. And so therefore, the owner of the animal does not need to guard it as well. It's a svara, it's a, you know, some logical argument that helps us understand the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Let's go over the Mishnah one more time. Didnan, kasher balav b'mosrav, n'alafanav karav, yasav yizik, echatam v'echan muad, chayev div remer. Remer says that if you leash the animal up, if you put it in a good enclosure, not great enclosure, so according to Remer, you're going to be held liable. And it doesn't matter if it's a tam or if it's a muad. Meaning for Remer, in order to avoid liability, you have to put it up in what's called shmira ma'ula, in a great enclosure. Rav Yehuda Amar Tam Chayv Muad Potter Shenemar V'lo Yishmeru Balav V'shamor Hu Zeh. Rav Yehuda says that if it's a Tam, it needs Shmir Ma'ula. If it's a Muad, Shmir Pechus, a basic Shmir would be good. And Rav Lazar Amar Ein Lo Shmir Ela B'sakin. And Rav Lazar is of the opinion that if you want good Shmir, you know what you do? You kill the animal. And that's the best Shmira out there. Just kill the animal. So in other words, according to Rav Lazar, there's no Shmir ever that you're going to be able to do that's going to get you out of liability. You're always going to be liable. Now, our Mishnah is going like Rav Yehuda. How do I know that? So the reason why I know that is because our Mishnah is talking about animals eating. Animals eating is muad. That's what animals do. Animals eat. So therefore, that's muad. What did our Mishnah say? That if you penned it up with a basic enclosure, you're going to be off the hook. So that only reflects one Tana's viewpoint, presumably. And that's Rav Yehuda. Because Rav Meir says you need Shmir Ma'ula, even by Muad. Rav Elazar says you need to kill the animal. So the only position that our Mishnah could be reflecting is that of Rav Yehuda.
Are we talking in the category of Shein or category of Karen?
Well, right now, our Mishnah is talking about Shein. Because our Mishnah is talking about animals eating.
The owner of the chain doesn't really.
You're already in the right direction in terms of what the Gemara is about to say. So Afilu Tamer Reb Meir. So the Gemara says, look, our Mishnah could be going like Reb Meir as well. And again, what's the motivation? So I think the motivation is what usually, and we find this very often, our Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah. Our Mishnah, well, at the end, our Mishnah cites opinions, but throughout most of our Mishnah is a Stam Mishnah. It's just we're more comfortable with the idea that our Mishnah is reflecting the viewpoint of Reb Meir. And the Gemara says, our Mishnah could be Reb Meir. Shani Shane Veregel Da Torah Miata Bishmir Asan. You see, our Mishnah is not talking about Karen. Our Mishnah is talking about Shane. And even Reb Meir will tell you that for the Nezik of Shane and Regel, you don't need the best Shmira. Basic Shmira is going to be good enough. And how do I know this? Four different categories of Nezik where the level of Shmira basically goes down. The threshold of Shmira has been reduced. And they are the four, not all four categories of Nezek, but four of the categories of Nezek. We're going to go through each one. Bor yichzik ki yiftech, ishbor, o ki yichre ishbor, v'lo yichasenu, hakisal pater. Now for a pit, what do you have to do for the pit? You don't have to fill in the pit again. All you need to do is cover it. You see, shmira for a pit is very basic. Just put a cover on top. If it wasn't as basic, you would have to fill in the pit. So you see that for boar, the Torah said shmir is basic. And the Torah when describing fire says, you set the fire. Meaning that as long as you have some sort of control over the fire, you're going to be good. You're going to be exempt from liability. If a crazy wind were to come and take the fire, you're going to be off the hook. Okay. When it comes to Shane, the Torah describes how you basically push the animal into someone else's field. Now, of course, you didn't do that. The Torah is basically speaking to the idea that as long as you penned it up with a reasonable enclosure, well, you're good. And Regel dechsiv v'shilach ad David kein v'shilach. And again, the Torah, when describing Regel, says, and you sent into someone else's property. Again, you didn't send it into someone else's property. It just simply means that as long as you have a basic enclosure, you're good. So in these four categories of Nezek, basic enclosure is sufficient. So, and then the Gemara quoted the Pesukim that we saw already all the way in the beginning of the Masechta, that these Pesukim are referring to Shein Veregel. Now, time of David Cain, Vishilach Uvir, Halo Avid, Lo. And the Gemara just simply concludes its point, which is, as long as you don't basically push the animal to someone else's property, as long as you gave it a basic enclosure, you are good for Shein Veregel. What have we seen so far? Our Mishnah is not limited to Rav Yehuda. Yes, Rav Yehuda says that when it comes to Karen, you need basic Shmira by a Muad. And Rav Meir says that you need Shmira Ma'ula. You need an upgraded Shmira when it comes to Karen. But now what the Gemara is telling us is that when it comes to Shein V'Regel, even Rav Meir will tell you basic Shmira is enough. Amar Rabba Masnisa Nami Deka Diktani. And Rabba says, and I'll tell you what, you look at our Mishnah, you read the Mishnah, read it carefully, and you're going to see he's right. Meaning, our Mishnah is reflecting the opinion of Reb Meir. Why? Diktani tzon. Because look at the animal described in our Mishnah. Sheep. Notice, up until now in the Masechta, what has been our animal of case study? It's been shur. Mechti b'shur kaskin v'asin nisne shur. In other words, if the Mishnah would have stayed on topic or on point, the Mishnah would have gone with shur. Mishnah diktani tzon. The Mishnah now shifted in animals to a sheep. Why should that be? Because it's the Mishnah is reflecting this viewpoint that we're talking about sheep, specifically the sheep eating. Sheep is not goring. The sheep we're talking about the sheep eating, and the idea is that there is there's a reduction of how much shmira you need. Mishum dekan karen lo ksive ba shein v'regel hu dekside v'kamashman de shein v'regel de muad den hu shma mina. And shein v'regel always falls under the category of muad, meaning shein v'regel, there's no chatzi nezek shalem. Shein v'regel is muad mitzchilaso. And so that's why the Mishnah is telling us that That's why the shift in animals that's sown, because we're talking specifically about Shane, about Regal, and the idea is that even Rav Meir's position is, you only need basic Shmira. Okay. As a quick summary of what we saw today, Shur v'chamor in the Torah, I mentioned 8 different times in the Torah, really refers to all animals. Okay, and the Mishnah all the way back on Nundal Amud Beis, where we started this morning, went through the 8 different mitzvahs where it was not just limited to Shur v'chamor, it was reflective of all animals. We did a little bit of Agadata this morning regarding the comparison of Dibros Rishonos to Dibros Achronos, the letter Tes, seeing a eulogy in a dream. And then we talked a little bit at the end of the perek, at the end of the 5th perek, about the prohibition of crossing animals, crossing fish, maybe aquatic animals. How about harnessing the power of a land animal and an aquatic animal together? Those are the last topics of the 5th perek. And then we started the 6th perek today. We talked about putting an enclosure around an animal. What we learned together in the beginning of the 6th perek of the Masechta is that when it comes to Shane v'Regel, as long as you put a basic enclosure around the animal, so then you have satisfied your obligation. If the animal breaks down and the animal does damage, you're going to be exempt because it falls under the category of ones. Stop over here.